This is Digital Story Podcast number 1007, July 8th, 2025. Today's theme is Tech Tales from the Dark Side. I'm Derek Story. On May 12th, I was en route to the TVS Redwoods Photo Workshop based in Klamath, California. I had the EV ID4 loaded up, and I was ready for a week of photography adventure. About halfway through my trip north, I had a technological mishap that I'm living with to this day. What happened and how I'm dealing with it is the first story in today's TVS Photography Podcast. I hope you enjoy the show. So I've been sitting on this story for a little while because when I talked about it, I wanted to talk about how it's going with how I'm adapting, right? I mean, I could have talked about it right after it happened, and that would have been, you know, interesting, I think. We'll find out. You'll be the judge of that. But now it's been almost 2 months since it happened, and I've been living with it the entire time. And I just think that, you know, these last 2 months are just as important as the event itself. All right, so I won't keep you in suspense any longer. Here's what happened, and then I'll talk about how I'm dealing with it. So when I'm driving the ID4, I have to stop and charge every couple hours, you know, refuel it. It's an electric vehicle. And when I'm going places, I already have my route mapped out, so I know where I'm going to stop and all that kind of stuff. And I sort of time it so that, you know, I can have bathroom breaks, I can have my meals, all that kind of stuff. Now, it's a pretty self-sufficient vehicle. In other words, I have a refrigerator in the back area. I have, you know, all the stuff that I need is back there. And so when I stop to recharge, then I just open up the back boot and I, you know, got a place to sit there and, you know, have a bite to eat and all that good stuff. It's actually quite efficient. So even though I spent more time refueling that car than I would my gasoline-powered Audi, it really, in the flow of the trip, is not that big a deal because I'm being very efficient and having my meals and all that stuff. All right, back. That's the backstory. So when I got about halfway up to Klamath, and I was excited. I mean, this Redwoods workshop that we did this year was fantastic. I had already done a scouting trip. I knew what we were in for, and I was very excited about it. So I stop at a charging station, and the way that I do this is that, you know, the charging cables are heavy, the kind that I use, that the ID4 uses, I should say. So I need two hands. So I use the app on the iPhone to initiate the charge. You know, you just go, oh, here it is, charger number 4, swipe. And the iPhone talks to the charger, and then the charging starts, or is ready to start as soon as you plug in. So what I do is I set the iPhone on the top of the car. Bad habit, won't be doing that again. Set the iPhone on the top of the car, use both hands to plug the charging cable into the car, and then I usually grab the iPhone, stick it in my pocket, and do what I'm going to do. On this particular trip, the iPhone was sitting on top of the car, and I had the back tailgate open because I had already gotten something out of there, I think a cold drink. So the back tailgate was open, the boot. iPhone was sitting on the car, near the edge of the boot, you know, where that area there. I forgot to put the iPhone in my pocket. I go grab some food out of the boot, get a little bite to eat. I'm kind of sitting there for a few minutes. iPhone's still on top of the car. I think what happened is when I was getting the food and sitting back there, you know, I just sit on the edge, and doing all that kind of stuff, I think I sort of bounced the car a little bit. You know, sort of, you know, a little bit of motion. I feel like what happened was that the iPhone that was sitting on top of the car, and it's a waxed car, it has a nice finish on it, it's a little slippery. I think it worked its way down to that edge where, you know, the hatch goes up. You know, so you have a gap there, right, between the roof and then where the hood goes up and down. That iPhone wiggled its way to that gap. So then when I went to close the hatch, you know, I just push a button and the hatch automatically starts to close. So I had finished what I was eating, had something to drink, closing the boot, press the button, and the boot kind of slowly goes down. It's like a, you know, drawbridge or something like that, like a moat kind of thing. As it's going down, I hear this crunching sound, this very loud crunching sound. And I go, oh my God, what is that? So I'm hitting the button, right, to stop the thing. And, you know, I could have just, like, I think grabbed the tailgate itself, the boot itself. But, you know, when you're in that moment, you know, it's a little bit of panic. I stopped the boot from going down about halfway. And I look on the top of my car because I don't know what made that sound. I didn't know what happened. I just knew that it was not a good sound. So I'm looking around and then I see my iPhone half inside the boot there in that crack and half sticking up. So it had slid down and wedged in that gap and being crushed by the boot as it was closing. There it was. So I raised the boot back up and then I went and grabbed my iPhone. The iPhone was still alive, but it was severely damaged. And when I say severely damaged, I mean badly. So it had a case on the back, and the case was, you know, kind of dented and all of that. But the front, the screen, was crushed. Now, it was still in one piece, which I found very interesting. Sort of like safety glass, you know, where it takes that blow and it cracks, but it doesn't fall apart. Well, that's what happened with my iPhone. It took that blow, all sorts of spider webs and stuff, but it didn't fall apart. So I'm looking, but it was really rough when I ran my finger across the top of the screen. You know, I was afraid I was going to cut it, that kind of roughness. But I went ahead and fired it up. And so the screen comes on. So that was a very good sign. The screen comes on, but there is definitely some damage to the presentation of my apps and anything on the screen. So the top where the dynamic island is, totally wiped out. And I have a picture in the show notes of this iPhone 15 Pro Max, after the incident. We'll just call it the incident. So I have a picture there so you can see what I'm talking about. But the top where the dynamic island is, where it, you know, and that's where face detection is, all that, that's nothing but a black blob, nothing there. And then there's this wild little thin line that runs across the screen about 25% the way down, and it's permanent. So that glowing line is permanent and it has been there ever since. And then I have this bar of light on the right side it's probably, oh, I don't know, maybe an eighth of an inch thick, which is a lot, right? And it's just sort of blaring on the right side. And then there's the screen itself, but of course the glass is cracked. So you're looking through cracked glass to the screen. And then the final touch to this is that it pulses now. It just sort of pulses. So thank God I'm not epileptic, because I probably would have gone straight into seizure. It's got this constant pulse. So I'm just going, oh my word, you know, this is just, you just go, oh, how, you know, how could I do this? I'm such an idiot sort of thing. But I did do it. So I popped the back case off and I'm looking at the body. If I lay the phone face down, you can't tell that was ever in an accident. It's unbelievable. It was crushed with the car and there's no damage on the back. Now the case helped with that and the case took, you know, a lot of the abuse, but the body itself withstood the pressure of all that. So the camera lenses are in good shape. the body itself. So if I lay it face down, no one knows that anything happened. It's when I turn it up that you go, oh, wow. So that was at the beginning of the workshop. You know, and I like to use the iPhone as my backup camera. I mean, the iPhone 15 Pro Max has such good cameras in it that it is my backup camera. Here's the thing. I carry an extra iPhone with me, and this is the weirdest thing. And I carry it for another reason, but it turned out to be a lifesaver on this trip and moving forward. So the other iPhone that I carry is the iPhone 10. I think the iPhone 10 is one of the best iPhones that Apple has ever made. In fact, I saw a list the other day, I think it was on stuff.com or whatever, and they listed every model of the iPhone in order of, you know, from worst to best. In their list, the iPhone 10 was number three. And the number one iPhone was the first one because it was a breakthrough. So, and I don't remember what the second one was, but the iPhone 10 was number three. The reason why I carry it is I pirated a Verizon card out of an old iPad, and it was the same size card that the iPhone 10 uses. So when I changed iPads, you know, I went to the, you know, the eSIM for the new iPad, and I had this one with Verizon. Now, all my other devices are on AT&T, but I always feel like I need to have a Verizon device with me on the road because, well, for obvious reasons, right? If the AT&T stuff is being shut out, then you're hoping that Verizon can get a signal. And sometimes I need a signal. I need to answer email. I need to do stuff because even when I'm traveling, I'm working. The iPhone 10 has a Verizon card in it. Now, that's the good news. The bad news is it's not a voice card. It's only a data card. I have a Verizon card in the iPhone 10 that I can use for data, but I can't make phone calls other than 911. But it's been a great backup, and it saved me many times because I can do things like talk to an EV charger in the middle of nowhere if there's a charger in the middle of nowhere and I don't have AT&T. Or send a text message, or, you know, do all those other things. So I had the iPhone 10 with the data card in it, and I have all the apps and everything on it set up like my other phone. So I'm pretty functional with it. And I managed to get by with it during the week because the other iPhone was just too scary to use at this point. When I got home, though, then I was sort of deciding, well, what am I going to do? Am I going to just go out and buy an iPhone 16? And some people were suggesting, well, you could probably get the screen replaced on your 15 Pro Max. And I know I can do that. However, it's more than the screen, right? I mean, the digitizer underneath is, ooh, it's spazzing is the best way I can put it. So I just don't think that's a route. And I don't feel like getting a new iPhone this late in the cycle when an iPhone 17 Pro is going to be out here in mid-September. So I was saying, okay, here's what I'm going to do. I am going to tough it out. I am going to tough it out with my iPhone 10 that can't talk but has data, and then my iPhone 15 that can talk but just don't look at the screen. And when I use it for CarPlay and stuff inside the VW, it actually goes in a little area where I can cover the lid, you know, just put a lid. And of course, on CarPlay, it works fantastic because everything's functional. And in fact, even the cameras work perfectly. It's a horrible experience lining up the shot, but the pictures it takes are still just as good as, you know, when it was brand new. So it's this really weird sort of thing. So the only other thing I had to figure out is, what about the cracked glass on the screen? So I put a screen protector. I just found an old screen protector from, like, you know, you dig around in the sock drawer, right? I've got one in here somewhere, and I think I had one from an iPhone. I think it was a 12. I got a screen protector, and I just put, my logic was, if I put a screen protector over the cracked glass, then I have a smooth surface to, you know, rub my finger on to use it when I need to. And at the same time, it might hold the glass together. And it's doing that. It's actually the screen protector over the cracked screen is working really well. This is my setup. So I have a phone that I can make calls on, you know, the AT&T, and it's part of my plan. I still can use all the cameras on it. That works great. In a pinch, I can do things like text and stuff. It's just I can only take the vibrating, pulsating, cracked screen for so long. And then when I just want to browse stuff, when I just, you know, want to answer email, when I want to check Instagram, you know, when I want to do that kind of stuff, then I'm using the iPhone 10 because it works great with Wi-Fi. And even when I'm out in the field, I still have data with it. So I'm using two iPhones, and I was determined that I was not going to go out and buy a brand new iPhone until the new ones came out. I want to get the 17 Pro. I'm going to go a little smaller this time because it's going to have, I think, all the features that I need, and I won't have to go with the Pro Max. I won't have to go with the bigger handset. The reason why I didn't want to talk about this earlier is that, you know, it's very conceivable that I get a week into this and I just go, this is ridiculous, and I'm not going to do it, and I go out and buy an iPhone. However, I have now lasted 2 months with this configuration, and now it's become a point of pride. It's like, okay, I'm halfway through. Let me see, what is this, July, mid-July, mid-August? Yes, I'm halfway through. I can make it another 2 months for the iPhone 17. Now, you know that when they make that announcement and they open up orders for the iPhone 17, I will be first in line. I will stay up, you know, to the wee hours. I will do whatever it takes to get that phone as soon as possible. But I'm going to stick it out. And I'm sort of proud of myself that I didn't cave in and just go out and buy a new iPhone right away. I'm gutting it out here. I've got my Frankenstein iPhone that's still functional. And by the way, let's talk about durability. This phone, this iPhone 15 Pro Max, was crushed. I mean, crushed in, you know, the gap of my car between the boot and the body. And it still works. I mean, to me, that's just unbelievable. And the fact that really the only thing that has gone wrong here is that the glass is, you know, a mess, and that it ate the digitizer during the crushing process. But I mean, up at the dynamic island anyway, I have no face detection at all. I changed it so that instead of Face ID, I just do my passcode when I open it, you know, that sort of thing. But the fact is that it's still functional after that experience really impresses me. I mean, these things are built well. I've got 2 months to go. I'm gonna make it, and I'll keep you posted. All right, let's get a little camera industry news here. This first one, this is on Petapixel, and I have a link to it in the show notes. These contest-winning photos were picked by AI and not a person. I thought this was fascinating. Let me read you a little bit about it. To celebrate its 10th anniversary, German AI company PRC, best known for its Xire photo management software, hosted a photo contest judged entirely by AI. The winners have been revealed. Did AI evaluator make the right picks? And by the way, they have the photos here that AI picked, so you definitely want to go over to the article and take a look. Xire's People in Focus contest offered photographers a chance to win their share of a $7,000 prize pool, including a $4,000 grand prize. When Xire announced the contest, the company said that its AI judge had been carefully trained by expert photographers using hundreds of thousands of photos. PRC said that the contest would be a fun way to compete, win money, and start a conversation surrounding the use of AI in photography. The company also said that the AI judge would be extremely fair. Human judges can be inconsistent and biased. XIR's AI judge, however, analyzes submissions with unerring consistency, PRC said. XIR's AI offers impartial evaluations without subjective bias and has already served as a juror in several prestigious photo contests. Examining the final top 20 photographs from AI Judge People in Focus photo contest reveals some emerging trends regarding the AI's preferences for specific types of photos. Of the top 20 photos, many exhibit particularly strong contrast and dramatic lighting. Several of the images also featured stylized color treatments, eschewing neutrality in the favor of heavy tinting and white balance adjustments. It's also hard not to notice that many of the highly scored images featured young, conveniently attractive women, although that's perhaps not so unusual in portrait-focused photo contests. The competition also did something very unusual, only possible with a computer judge. Submissions were judged immediately upon entry, and a public leaderboard was updated in real time during the submission period, which ran through the entire month of June. It is easy to wonder if photographers adapted their submissions based on the images that had already been scored highly by the AI judge, which could help explain some of the aesthetic consistencies visible in the top 20 leaderboard. And then here's the take by Petapixel on all of this. I used to enter many photo contests when I was getting started in photography. It was a fun way to measure my skills against my peers and a great excuse to go through my photos and post-process my favorites. Although I had occasional successes, I mostly came up short. That's the nature of the beast for most of us. While it's always easy to blame judges when losing a contest, the fact of the matter is that any photo competition, especially the big ones, there are dozens if not hundreds of photos that you could make a case for as being the ultimate winner. There are many talented photographers, and someone could be incredibly skilled yet never win a contest. I'm not lumping myself into that group. There are many contests I entered that I never had a chance in hell of winning. But my point is, while human judges can err or make mistakes, it is seldom the case that a single judge or jury of talented photographers picks a bad winning image. XIR's AI judge didn't either, for what it's worth. However, I don't see the need for an AI judge in a photo contest. It's also not something I want, even if it could be better in some sense. Real meaningful art is created by people, and I think it should be judged by them too. Even if they don't always get it right, whatever right means in this case. I found this very interesting, and the experiment itself doesn't bother me, because I do like the idea of consistent criteria, whatever they may be, when judging a photo contest. And, you know, the writer of this story said, well, you know, art is created by humans and it should be judged by humans. I'm not going to argue against that, but at the same time, I find it interesting that maybe sometimes we will have contests judged by AI. And I could see both existing together, some contests done by humans, you know, especially contests that maybe things like portraiture or things like that. And then some contests judged by AI, especially when we're dealing with subject material such as landscape or something like that. Like a lot of things that are going on right now, I don't see it as one replacing the other. I find it interesting, and I think there is a place for it. You know, as long as everything's up front, you know how your entry is going to be judged. And I think just over time, as we build more data about how this works, and we can compare the winners of AI judge contests against the winners of human judge contests, I think all that's fun. I really do. And hats off to PRC for giving this a whirl. Okay, I'm going to talk about something that I personally have tested, and I ordered it about 2 weeks ago, and I wanted to wait till I got it in hand before I talked about. Boy, this is another company. I have no idea how to say it, so I'm going to spell it. The company is HAOGE. HAOGE. So this company has created and is selling a grip for the OM3. And this is something that I've been waiting for. I have been, every week, I research, see what's out there, looking for a grip for the OM3 for a couple reasons. One, I have grips on my other two cameras, my ZF and on my X100V. And I love having that Arca Swiss plate always on the bottom. I don't have to fool around with plates. So if I'm using a tripod, I just pop it on, pop it off. And I like having the little extra stability. I have somewhat large hands, and so having a grip really helps me when I'm taking pictures. It's just more comfortable. I was hoping a small rig would come out with one, because that's what I'm using on my ZF, and I really like their grip. Nothing happened. I saw some custom ones show up on Etsy, but they were expensive, and the lead time was really long. And then finally, about 2 weeks ago, I discovered this one. And this is a great little grip. It comes in at $49.98. So a little less than 50 bucks. I believe the shipping was free. The features are precise machining, textured microfiber leather on the surface. And that textured surface is really nice, and it looks good with the camera. Arca Swiss standard interface compatible with all Arca Swiss style quick release platforms. Base plate with 1/4 inch stainless steel screw for mounting the camera. And the material is aluminum, and it weighs about 124 grams. Now, the way they designed it, and I like this design, is that there's the base plate, and then the right hand grip can be removed. It has a screw, so you can take it on and off if you just want the base plate. And then they have vertical plate that goes up on the left side that you can use if you want to tripod mount the camera vertically. And it's pretty cool, and it's a good design, and it has an opening so that you can still get to the ports on the left side. And you can even turn it around the other way. And I'm talking about this bracket that allows you to mount the camera vertically. You can turn it around so the bracket comes off the bottom of the camera, which means then you can open the LCD screen all the way down and it doesn't get in the way. It's a pretty good design. The fit is very nice. It fits very well on the camera. It looks good on the camera. The Arca Swiss base plate is perfect. Put it on a couple tripods already. It's comfortable to hold. That little creative dial on the front, it's not a problem with the grip. I think OM System did a really good job of positioning this dial. And it almost looks like they anticipated a grip, because when the grip is on, the dial is perfectly centered between the grip and the lens. Pretty nice. I can get my fingers in there no problem. So that isn't an issue. I don't have any problem at all using that front control on the camera. If I were to change anything, I would say that you have to use an Allen wrench to put the screw for the base plate into the camera, which means you have to have an Allen wrench with you available if you want to take it off, or if it gets loose and you want to tighten it. My favorite ones have a slotted screw there so that you can use a coin to tighten it. I do prefer that. So that would be the one thing that I would change. They do have an open tripod socket right next to where that screw goes in. And that looks really good. I can get to the battery, no problem. It's nice. I'm really happy with it. I have a link to it in the show notes. It took about, from the time I ordered to the time that it actually showed up at my doorstep, was about, I want to say about 10 days, maybe 12 days, somewhere in there. It ships directly out of China, and you know they use that service. There is tracking, so you can sort of semi-follow it, and then it shows up. But no complaints. The price is right. $49.98. So if you're looking for a grip for your OM3, based on everything I've looked at over the last month, this looks like the best price and really works very well. All right, let's take care of a little virtual camera club news. I want to thank our Inner Circle members, both Inner Circle Bold and Inner Circle members, for their support of this community and for also their participation on our space, our special space for Inner Circle members, and just for keeping the embers glowing. You know, I just love it that I can go over to Derek Story online anytime, you know, that I just feel like interacting with photographers, looking at pictures, seeing what other photographers are saying. I can go over there anytime, either on my iPhone using the app, or on the computer, or on my iPad, and just get a little photography fix. And being able to do that, you know, with people that are not weenies, right? You know, like, I could read the comments on, you know, any number of the articles that I talk about when I do camera industry news, and the comments, sooner or later, they go off track into some sort of flame war. People are saying rude things to each other, and it's not helpful at all. We don't have any of that. We have none of that whatsoever. This group talks about photography. They're constructive, they're positive, and they're helpful. And I just think the world of them. So I want to thank our Inner Circle members, not only for their support of this podcast and this community, but also for just being the kind of people that I've always wanted to have an online experience with. And our Inner Circle is exactly what I had always hoped for, and we have it right now. If you want to become a part of it, all you have to do is click on the Patreon tile that's on all the pages of the Digital Story. You can sign up there. You'll get access to this forum that I'm talking about, our space. You'll get discounts for upcoming workshops. It's a good value, it feels good, and it really helps keep those photography embers glowing. And finally, a big shout out to our friends at Red River Paper, longest running sponsor of the Digital Story, the people that really stand behind inkjet printing in this time of digital madness. We have an island in the sea of digital madness that allows us to make artwork that is beautiful, that stands the test of time, that we can hand to other people, that we can put on the wall, that we can mail a beautiful fine art card to friends, family, people that we want to say thank you to. Red River Paper is our island of sanity in a world of digital madness. And if you want to learn more about the great paper they have, about the techniques they share, about the reviews of printers they have already taken a very close look at, then all you have to do is click on the tile that's on every page of the Digital Story. Take a look at what's going on. Order yourself some paper. Be sure to use our Digital Story code so that you get free shipping. And see what all the excitement's about when you create real artwork, real tangible artwork, thanks to Red River Paper. And don't forget about their Facebook page at facebook.com/redriverpaper. All right, it's going to do it for me this week. I hope you enjoyed the show, working on more terrific stuff for next week. Until then, get out there, take some pictures. See you next Tuesday. Bye-bye now.